Hello and welcome back to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Nuttall, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur. So Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, mate, of course. This is our first podcast being recorded in 2021, so that's very, very exciting.
Indeed.
Good way to kickstart the new year. And then in terms of the cricket scene as well, we've had some fantastic matches going on at the moment. We've had the Big Bash, the Super Smash, New Zealand versus Pakistan, which came to a conclusion today, South Africa versus Sri Lanka. So not too bad, to be honest, Joe. It's been all right for me at the moment. But yeah, Joe, I'm doing well. How about yourself, mate?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. Obviously, like I say, I've been watching a bit of the cricket, a bit of the Big Bash in the mornings, and then just been very much enjoying the football at the moment. Obviously, United flying high. So yeah, it's been good to watch. But yeah, I'm not too bad. But we are also joined today by a very special guest. I'm delighted to welcome along Lancashire all-rounder Josh Bahanan to join us on the podcast today. So Josh, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not bad, Joe. Thanks very much. Yeah, we're not bad.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. We've got a lot of different things to be discussing. Obviously, as a Lancashire fan, you're the first Lancastrian guest we've had on the podcast, which is pretty crazy, really. But yeah, we're going to be obviously talking about your early career, growing up and stuff like that, and then about your time at Lancashire, and finishing off with everybody's favourite section of teammates. But let's get straight into it then. So Josh, what would you say your first memory of cricket is, right back when you were, sort of growing up? What would you say your first memory of cricket is?
I'm sure you've heard this one a lot, but it is true. The 05 Ashes. My first proper memory of it would be that. I can't really decide. I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I sat with my girlfriend's brother. He talks about the 05 Ashes all the time, but maybe between the KP 150 or that over from Flintoff, I'm not quite sure.
I mean,
it's a cliche, but it's true.
What a series, and we still don't remember it, which is a shame. We missed out on it by a few years in terms of like age. So yeah, I mean, surely it has to be Flintoff being Lanks.
Yeah, I think so. I love KP's cricket. Probably Flintoff tops it, I think.
What a legend.
Yeah, this is going to be the running theme, by the way, listeners. We have got two Lancashire boys in the podcast today, so don't be surprised if there is a bit of Northern bias. But yeah, 2005 Ashes, although we didn't per se watch it live, it is still one of the legendary and iconic cricket series, isn't it? Just so many fantastic moments. Every single game in that series had something that we still remember to this day and that we'll remember for so many more years to come. It's just brilliant, brilliant cricket, absolute blockbuster stuff. But for us, Josh, we actually started, in fact, both of our cricketing, well, English cricketing journeys, I suppose, in 2009. So the 2009 Ashes. Mm. And for me as a Warwickshire fan, obviously, at the Oval, Jonathan Trott, with that debut century, what a knock that was. That's the thing, though, isn't it? When you have Ashes series like that, and we get this so many times when we bring on guests, it really does, what to say, almost nurture your love for the game, doesn't it? That's like a common ground, an Ashes series for English cricketers, English cricket fans. And then from there, you kind of get hooked and you just can't stop. And yeah, to this day, we're sat here talking about cricket. So yeah, quite clearly, the love has still remained for all three of us. But Josh, you mentioned there, obviously, Andrew Flintoff and Kevin Peterson, both absolute geniuses in their respective fields on the cricket field. But who would you say were your cricketing inspirations? Who did you look up to in the world of cricket, per se?
I would probably say at the time, when I was younger, when I first started getting interested at 8, 9 years old, then probably would have been like the likes of Flintoff and Peterson. And then obviously for that on that, then you started to realise that I was batting and stuff like that. I started to look at people like Ponting, Ian Bell, people like that who've obviously a massive fan of him. So they were the ones that when I first started playing were the ones that I looked up to. As I got further and further along, got a little bit older, obviously, that changed. And then probably as of late, it's been, as of probably the last few years, really, probably Joe Root. Just love the way he plays and love the way he goes about the game as well. I have obviously been lucky enough to play with some serious players and play against some serious players. We played a T20 game at Edgbaston, and just like the way that, like almost like his aura that Bell had when he came to the crease, especially for me being young as well at the time. Yeah, seriously good player.
Well, Josh, to be honest, I can't really argue with that choice. Of course, for the listeners out there, you'll probably already know, massive Ian Bell fan. one of my absolute all-time favourites. And we will talk about, obviously, your T20 games and the county career as the podcast progresses. But just before we do that, Joe, I also just wanted to ask you, because we have been speaking there about 2005, 2009, who would you say really stood out to you in those England squads? Who did you look up to, per se, in those teams?
I mean, I guess it has to be, I'll probably say Alistair Cook, you know. That was sort of when he was starting to, obviously down under 2010-11 was when he really probably started to peak properly. And that was when he was becoming the more experienced opener, or one of the more experienced openers alongside Strauss. So yeah, I'll probably say Alistair Cook was up there. And of course, the duo of Broad and Anderson as well, certainly in 2009, was just lethal, wasn't it? But that bowling attack in 2009 was lethal in general. You still had Flintoff and Harmison. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people kind of forget about that in a way, because that was sort of when Broad and Anderson were almost peaking themselves. So I think you kind of forget Flintoff and Harmison were actually playing in that series as well. So yeah, I would probably have to say Cook, Broad and Anderson were the three for me. It's pretty mainstream, really.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're mainstream for a reason, aren't they? All three are legends in their own regards, really. Again, it is interesting. It is really, really interesting. And when you think at the time, I suppose in both, England weren't exactly world beaters. But then in those two Ashes series, we looked absolutely unstoppable at times. So yeah, really interesting. And yes, it is a nice way, as I said, it's a nice foundation to kickstart a love of cricket, I think. But Josh, in terms of your personal game, I'm talking about nowadays, how would you describe yourself as a cricketer? How would you say that you approach the game?
Probably similar to a lot of other people. I would guess that as it starts, I would, at the minute, the way that my career has gone so far, obviously, if you've seen the stats, my red ball stats, first class stats, are a lot better than my white ball stats at the minute. And I think it's just through batting a little bit more as well, and picking people's knowledge a little bit more through that red ball game, that I've actually started to get a real understanding of what that game for me looks like, batting at three. At the minute, just with the team that we've got, and it's not an excuse, I've just not really had the chance to bat that much in white ball cricket. And I hope that obviously comes, and I hope that in the next however many years I can go on and equal the stats out on both sides. But yeah, I do try and be as calm as I can during practice, during games, whatever. But if you ask most of the Lancs lads, they say I'm quite fiery. So I always try and take the positive option if I can. But obviously, you can't always do that. But that's the way I try and go about it, and then just try and adjust.
Yeah. And what about, I just got to ask a little bit about your bowling as well, because that's sort of more been put on the back burner almost, certainly in red ball cricket, because of your position at number three. So what about your bowling, and how do you see that right now?
Yeah, so obviously, like my first season, 2018, I made my debut, I was obviously bowling quite a bit more than I am doing now. And I was actually like batting 7 and 8, trying to take that all-rounder role. At the time, Jordan Clark was doing that, and then he got injured and obviously left. So that was kind of given to me as such for a little bit. And obviously, there was other lads in that bracket as well, like Danny Lamb and people like that. And then I tried to focus a bit more on batting because I felt that was a stronger department for me, with obviously being a lot smaller than a fast bowler is. So I thought the batting side of it was probably the better option. It was going to be more success. So I went down that route. I still do work on my bowling a lot. I still do a lot of it, but obviously I've picked up injuries with back and sides and stuff like that. And I was actually ready to bowl for the first game of the season this year, playing Leicester at Worcester. But just in the warm-up, I got a little niggle in my side. So that was ruled out for the rest of the season, provided I could play as a batter. So that's what's happened with that. But I'm still working hard at it, so it's still an option.
Yeah, I bet that was frustrating as well. Obviously being ready and then picking up a slight injury, I bet that was pretty frustrating for you personally.
Yeah, obviously, like you said, it's frustrating. As well, as you said, it's another option as well. So if you're an all-rounder, but you're not, you say you've had a bad day with a bat, it's quite a nice summit sometimes, thinking, well, I can still make some on this game by taking 2-3 wickets or whatever, or going up 1 and over for 10 overs or something. You know, it's quite nice to have that in the back as well.
Yeah, without doubt. So let's talk a little bit about your Lancashire debut then. What do you remember from that day?
There's one person stands out, Morning Walker. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. I just remember being picked for the squad. I think I was in one squad before that. I can't remember where it was, though. It might have been Old Trafford or somewhere like that, and obviously didn't play. So we travelled down to the Oval, and that same the weekend after that, we had I was doing like a lot of 12 man duties for the T20 game, and they were going on to Kent, I think, to play like a quarter final. So we got down there. It was a pink ball game, day night, and we were like, right, we're going to train this afternoon or whatever, and then we'll go from there. No squads officially been picked and all that. So I was like, oh, I've done really well for second team. Might get a go if I do okay. And obviously we had our nets. I played really well, bowled decently as well. And I thought, oh, I've got a real chance here. And at the time, I think there was a spot because Clarkey was injured, I think. Or it might have been when he was going to Surrey, I think, or something like that. But it was kind of between me and Danny Lamb that we're going to play. And obviously with him being a bit involved at the time with squads a bit more than me, I thought he might get the nod. But he had some real issue doing some catching later on at night. Couldn't quite pick up the pink ball in the lights. So like that next morning, or maybe that night, I can't remember when it was, Chappie came to me and said, you're going to play tomorrow, so just get yourself prepped, no pressure, just go out and enjoy it. So I came back, obviously slept that night. I was in a room with Matt Parkey, and I couldn't really sleep. I was like, oh, I'm going to play tomorrow and this, that, and the other, overthinking stuff so much. Woke up the next day, had breakfast, and it just all felt a little bit weird. A little bit, obviously, it's about one of them things about when your dreams come true, you're a bit, well, I don't really know how to react. It was all called out in the warm-up, right, you're playing, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. So I remember bowling my first ball at the end of my mark and just, like, shaking. My hands were just, like, shaking so much. And then once I did that, it was all right. And the same thing with the bat. I was batting seven, I think. Or it could have been eight, I can't remember. But basically, we come so far that night, and Chappie said, oh, do you want a night watchman? And I was like, I'm batting number seven, or number eight, I can't remember what it was. I don't really need a night watchman. So he's like, no, we want to try and keep the batters as long as we can. So Parkey went in with like six overs left, obviously as night watchman, and then like second ball got hit on the shin, so I was in anyway. And just remember back, my first time going out to bat was with Crofty. And he just like took all the nerves away, made it feel really, really nice coming to the crease and stuff. But Morney was obviously fired up for that last few overs, like trying to get us all out. And just remember getting peppered on the gloves, getting hit in the thighs, everything, like short legs everywhere. So that was a bit of a interesting night. But I kind of felt like once I'd got through that, I remember sleeping on it that night thinking, well, I've kind of got through my hardest phase now. I've done the hard bit of my first knock and against Morney under lights, etc. And then obviously it's gone really well since then. That the next day went really well.
Yeah, it did. And what was it like playing under lights, obviously making a debut under lights? Because we don't even play, pink ball games in the last few years in county cricket. So what was that like? Because I assume it's not something you've really ever done for the second team.
No, absolutely not. It's just, again, it's like another like surreal thing. Not played much under lights anyway. And it's also like you have these... I still speak to Mark Chilton now, our batting coach, about it. I still say, like, it's weird how you're painting these pictures of first-class cricket, and you go from years and years of watching people play four-day cricket in the day. So I kind of painted that picture. My debut would be something like that in the sun at Old Trafford or something. And then I was under lights at night at the Oval. It was very good, but also very different.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a pretty unique experience to make your debut under lights. I don't think there's many people who've probably done that.
That is actually an excellent point, Joe. And Josh, I do just have to ask, because obviously you now have that experience of playing with the pink ball. Did you find it a lot harder to play against it, or did you kind of adapt to that quite quickly?
Well, I've only played one game in my career, obviously, against it. It was the first one, and then obviously all the rest have been red ball. I wouldn't say, obviously, no cricket's easy, is it? But I think all the nerves and stuff kind of got me through it, and I was almost like too preoccupied about all that sort of stuff as opposed to what was actually probably going on. So I can't really compare, but yeah, red ball cricket stuff.
Yeah.
But Josh, I do just have to touch upon that then. What if you had an opportunity to play more pink ball games? Would you be in favour of that, or do you prefer your traditional day matches with a red ball, nice shiny dukes? Which one would you prefer?
No, I do prefer playing red ball, but also I wouldn't mind... I don't know, maybe do one a year or something like that. You know, just change it up, make something a bit different, but also probably attract maybe a different audience. So yeah, I'd definitely be up for whatever. I'm not sure about every game, but yeah, I'd definitely be in favour of doing something towards it.
Yeah, and it's frustrating as well because there's never been a pink ball game at Old Trafford. So obviously as a Lancs fan, that's something I'd like to experience. So that, from, I guess it's a bit of a selfish motive really, but in that sense, personally, I'd quite like to experience that.
Yeah, they are. There's something intriguing about pink ball games. I went to the England West Indies test match at Edgbaston, and yeah, it is very, very interesting. And of course, well, in that same season, we beat Durham and Jonathan Trott got century. So maybe I wouldn't mind some more pink ball games in county championship cricket. We seem to be all right at them. But yeah, it is an interesting facet, I suppose, of cricket heading into the future, and something that we've actually discussed before on the podcast, haven't we, Joe? So we can see a lot more of heading into the future, as you rightfully said, Josh, because of that ability to attract a different audience, per se. Yeah. But Josh, bringing the conversation back on track to yourself then, of course, that must have been a massive moment for you making your debut for Lancs. And to be fair, you did an excellent job. I'll give you that. You scored 52 in the first innings, 32 in the second. And do you remember who your first wicket was in county cricket?
Rory Burns, yeah, chopped on.
Not a bad wicket at all, yeah. Very.
It was a jaffer, but yeah, chopped on.
To be fair, yeah, we say that quite often on the County Cricket podcast, don't we? The scorecard doesn't say how the wicket falls.
Exactly. It doesn't say, as long as it says bowl for Hannon, doesn't matter, does it?
Exactly. You take them. Typical bowler's mindset. But I do just want to touch upon that debut, just one more thing, Josh. And that is, of course, Mornay Morkel. Because in that game, he was borderline unstoppable. He took 6 for 57, I believe, in that game. What was it like to face Mornay Morkel when he's just steaming in like that? How difficult of an experience was that for you as a batsman?
I think that first night, if I'm brutally honest, I think me and Crofty just kept saying, just get through every ball. Like, if we get hit, it don't matter. Just get hit. Just don't get out, basically. Give ourselves the best chance of coming back tomorrow and trying to put on some sort of fight. But yeah, I think it's one of them things that you've watched him bowl on TV for so many years and do the whole thing where he turns at the end of his mark and you're watching him and you're like, how good is this? And then he's just trying to rip your head off. So, you know, he bowled from the pavilion end and I was facing him and there's like a wall that side and you're like looking back and I'm obviously small anyway, so I'm looking up towards him and then it's like just above the wall and then as he's getting bigger and bigger and it's just like he's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and then you're like, oh, yeah, no, it's obviously, you know, I pride myself on trying to challenge myself all the time and that was one of the best challenges I've come up against, if not the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool thing to be able to do on your debut, I bet, looking back on it now. And again, pretty unique to make your debut in a pink ball game facing Mornay Morkel. It's pretty unique. Yeah,
it was an interesting one. Obviously, I look back now thinking how good it was. It still is, but at the time, I think after a bit, after getting wrapped on the gloves and stuff a few times, I weren't sure how good it was.
Those six overs couldn't come quick enough.
I just wanted to get
end
off.
Of the day.
I don't think 9 o'clock could come fast enough.
Fair enough. Well, as I say, pretty cool thing to be able to do. But what would you say in general now, out of the whole of your Lancashire career, what would you say your proudest moment has been so far for Lancashire?
There's two, or probably three actually. Obviously, getting my first 50 at the Auburn debut, that was a special moment for me. As I was a kid, I just wanted to play first class cricket, just play one debut, sign a pro contract, play and just get one run. I would have been happy, but obviously to get 50 was a massive achievement. And then winning Division 2 with all my mates, that's probably the top one. But I think the one just below, just from an individual point of view, would be scoring 100. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And that innings was so, so good. Now, I watched virtually the whole of that innings and it was so well constructed. What are some of your memories from that 100? Let's touch upon that a little bit.
I just remember just going in, just thinking like I'd been given a go at Northants the first time batting three, and then I did it a couple of times after that, and then I hadn't really broke any pops by batting three, and I was kind of like, oh, I just don't really know if I'm going to bat three the next game, etc., etc. And I just thought if I just bat some time, I'll score runs naturally. Like, So I just remember saying, just keep batting all the time, just keep batting. Like, don't look at the scoreboard, just keep batting all the time. And obviously me and Livy just gone on a bit of a roll together. And just having him at the other end scoring as quick as he does, obviously took all the pressure off me. And I think almost Derby thought too much about bowling to Livy and forgot about what was happening at the other end too. And then obviously we got a partnership that way. And then I remember I was on 99 for so long, just kept hitting the ball back at Reece, he was bowling at the time, and then managed to just get one down the ground. And then it was just like a weird feeling. I can't really describe it, to be honest. Bit surreal. And then after that, we obviously just about trying to get through until the next day. And then probably my funniest memory was when I got 100, I was staying with Glenn Maxwell that night, and we had a couple of drinks and stuff. And we were sat there having a drink and some food just in Manchester. And he said, "Oh, I'm so happy. Wow, great way to leave on, et cetera." And then he said, "Oh, I can't wait to bat with you tomorrow." So I was like, yeah, me too. Livy got a snorter that next morning off Ravi Rampole, and then Maxie was in. He was like, "Mate, come on, let's make it count, et cetera." And then first ball, like, big wide looping R4, he chopped on. That was obviously, I was gutted not to really bat with him, but also funny as well. I think back now, it's funny.
Looking back on it, yeah, I bet that's frustrating. We will talk about that bromance, if you like, with Glenn Maxwell in a minute. But there is one more thing I have to ask about that 100. Did you ever feel tempted to do a Rob Jones-esque celebration when he got his maiden 100? Did you ever feel tempted to do a celebration like that?
Not if I'm honest, no. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Just because there was so much chat around it, I just thought, nah, probably not.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, that was... It was such an incredible knock, 174. Did you feel almost disappointed that you didn't get a double 100?
Yeah, I probably if you speak to some of the lads or that were involved in that game, or I remember speaking to Paul, our director of cricket, after, and I come in, I was like, I never chuck it ever now. I used to as a kid, but never chuck it. I remember like chucking my bat and helmet and everything. I was like, just so gutted because I'd worked so hard to get to 150 overnight, and then just like got 24 the next day, and then so lazy to get out the way I did. That was probably as angry as I've been, even when I've got like 30 or something. You know, it's just yeah one of them things. Like, they're the ones that we talk about, like making them count. So once you get in, like, get a massive score, which obviously I was so happy getting 174, but it's one of the things that no matter how many you get, you always want more, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's the nature of a cricketer, though, isn't it? Like, it's quite greedy in reality, but yeah, I guess it's a good quality to have as a cricketer, for sure.
Yeah, ruthless, isn't it? Ruthless mentality. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, that's just reminded me of, there's a phrase or a saying, which is always proud but never satisfied. And I feel like that is almost a quintessential batsman's mindset, isn't it? You're always proud of your achievements, but you always want to
overcome
the next hurdle, yeah.
Yeah. I guess the only way you can think you're proud and satisfied is if you're not out. That's really the only way. You literally can't get any more. So, yeah. Let's talk, Josh, then, about your county career as a whole. Is there any specific lessons that you may have learned that stand out to you over the course of your county career so far?
Yeah, I think that's nailed it in one, really. Character building is massive. I think the one thing I never learned as a kid was failure. Didn't never accept failure. And I still don't accept it now, but I'm kind of getting a little bit better at it. Accepting that you can't score 100 every knock, or you can't take 5 wickets every time, or whatever. You're never going to have the perfect game every week.
Yeah.
So I think that would be one of them. I definitely think it's helped with maturity. Just like when you're around that environment and like some of the people you play with and against, you know, the likes of Crofty, people like that, you just want to be like them and aspire to how they train, their attitude about it all. That you probably think you do have when you're younger, but you don't have until you actually experience it. I think they'd probably be the two. Just the willingness to learn, I think, and always want to get better, which I think I did have slightly as a kid, but I think when you're young and you're scoring runs, I think you become very arrogant. And there's no space for that in professional cricket. it can all bite you in the backside too fast.
Yeah, I think that's some very important lessons, and to anyone who may be a young up-and-coming cricketer who's listening, definitely something important to bear in mind, because certainly you've seen people have seen examples of it throughout sport in general, of someone who's been really, really successful and then has become too arrogant or thinks this is too easy, and then their career doesn't unfortunately take off. So yeah, I would say they're definitely important lessons.
And I suppose another trait that we have to mention, and I know we keep on bringing up the edge, but the one word begins with R, and it is resilience. And that's something that I've always found is so important, not just in cricket, but in sport in general. And that is definitely a fantastic lesson to learn as well. You said there, Josh, you're not going to get a century every single match or a fiver. Because if you did, it'd be very, very boring, and you'd be the greatest of all time, and there wouldn't even be a debate, would there, for who's the greatest. It's a very, very, very important life lesson to learn. And for that reason, yeah, I think that's a perfectly good way of looking at it, to be honest.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's so important, you know, to sort of something to build on almost as a professional. And just in life in general, I guess, really. That's something to build on. Yeah. So yeah, without a doubt. So, Josh, there is one thing, I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, that I'd like to talk about a little bit, and that is your bromance with Glenn Maxwell. So personally, for me, Glenn Maxwell is probably my favourite player in the world right now. I mean, I'm a Melbourne Stars fan as well, so that like helps, obviously, plays for Lancs. How did that sort of start? Because it's kind of, I guess, not many people would have predicted that. How did that kind of start?
I just remember we were playing our first... So obviously it got announced that he was signing. We were in Dubai at the time on pre-season. And then it got announced that he'd signed for us for however long and whatever. And then he got added to all the chats and stuff that we have. And then he just said, "Oh, lads, I'm out for a beer. Does anyone fancy coming? Don't bring your wallets. I'll get you drinks." So we were like, "Wow, this bloke's like so generous and seems so nice." So a few of us went out that night and had a couple of drinks with him. And then obviously got chatting that way. And then when he first came over, we went down to Loughborough to play our like first pre-season game as such. And like, thankfully I was there with, I think it was me and Crofty, were like one of the first two there the night before. And Maxi was already there, and he just said, "Anyone fancy drinking the bar?" So me and Crofty like went down and met him and introduced ourselves again and what have you. And then we got chatting, and it kind of just went from there, really. We just found ourselves chatting all the time. And then maybe in the next morning, and one of the coaches was flicking, he was waiting to bat, or he just batted or something like that. And he just so happened to say, like, "Do you mind if I just intervene and just have a chat with you? But I think this might work if you do this." And it kind of went from there, and obviously did a lot of things together. I mean, yeah, it was brilliant, really. He's one of the best summers I've ever had.
Can I just touch upon this and elaborate, I suppose, Josh? Because obviously doing the research for this podcast, I found some quotes from Glenn Maxwell in the Bolton News. And this is him talking about you. "He was pretty special, and I asked if he didn't mind me giving him some hints and tips. We clicked. Both our partners are now really good friends, and we've been on countless double dates." And then he's also said, "I'll be staying in contact with him for as long as I can. We're very, very close friends." So, Josh, I just wanted to ask about this, really. Do you find it almost unbelievable at times that you are very, very close friends with one of the most exciting and entertaining cricketers in the entire world? He's an extraordinarily talented cricketer. We've seen him reverse sweeping, switch hitting all around the world. Do you almost find it unbelievable at times that you are friends with a guy like that?
Yeah, sometimes. I think what I really loved was just how like willing he was to speak about the game, and like very open about having struggles with how he felt. I think that helped that I was quite open with him as well. It was just like almost, it felt like we knew each other for years when we first met. It was quite a weird scenario, really. We kind of opened up to each other straight away, which obviously normally you wouldn't do, or you'd find quite difficult to do if you'd only just met someone. Yeah, we still stay in touch a hell of a lot. At one stage, we used to speak every day, but obviously he's busy now with the Big Bash. But yeah, he's done a lot for me, obviously in the nets and stuff and on the pitch. But it was just a great sounding board off the field. Dead easy just to go and have a few drinks with him. He always wanted to talk cricket. He was always watching cricket, and that's the one thing I really enjoyed was not always about cricket, but if he wanted to talk cricket, you know, he'd be happy to, and didn't feel like he had to hide anything. It was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good that you can have, you know, relationships like that within a team as well, because some team environments in world sport, you know, people don't necessarily always get along. So, you know, I guess it's just good that you can have relationships like that with people in the team. But I do have to ask this about him. Is he the best fielder in the world, in your opinion?
Yeah, I've seen some seriously good fielders. I've seen Crofty do some unbelievable stuff in training and on the field. But yeah, I think it's not just his fielding, though. It's the way he does stuff as well. And like, he demands the whole field. Like, when he gets on the field, everyone's looking at him. And he's like positioning people. He like reads the game two steps ahead or two balls ahead every time. Like, he knows where the ball's going to go, and he's in that position. And so, some of the stuff he's done on the field, yeah, he'd probably be the best I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's probably the best in the world as well. A run out that he got in the World Cup for Australia, I think it was against Pakistan, and he was at either short mid wicket or short cover, I can't remember which. And yeah, he jumped and caught the ball one-handed in the air off like a bounce, and threw it. Like, I think he was probably still mid-air when he threw it, and threw it over one stump and threw the stump down. That was incredible. So yeah, I mean, personally for me, I would have to say he's the best fielder in the world. But I mean, I actually think Lanks are blessed with some seriously good fielders. You mentioned Croft there, Livingston as well, ridiculously good fielder. So
yeah, we're quite lucky with that. We do a lot of work on that. We've got some seriously good fielders. Like you said, we are quite blessed with good fielders and boundary riders, especially. You know, there's quite a few of us that do that. Even when you look at this, like Alex Davies, how good a fielder he is, and he's wicked.
Yeah, exactly.
He made a massive impact in the field whenever he took the gloves off. Dane Vilas obviously had the gloves on for quite a while now, but he'll be back in the field. And as you've seen, some of the catches he took at Leicester last year, some of the stuff he does in the field is a joke as well.
Yeah, as I say, I think Lanks are probably, but I would say the best fielding team in the country. I would certainly in the outfield. I would definitely say that.
Did you see Jake Lintott run out of Ben Cox?
Yeah, but that was one example.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now maybe I'm being a bit biased, but I actually genuinely do believe that. I genuinely do. So yeah, what would you say, looking back on the 2020 season now, Josh? What would you say your personal highlight was from this season? So obviously it was one of ups and downs for Lanks. What would you say your personal highlight was?
Obviously, the white ball season for me didn't obviously go as planned, but my highlight would have to be one of two innings. Would either have to be the 70 odd that I got at Durham in quite a tough situation. I batted I don't know, 5 hours, I think. Batted 2.5 sessions, and which is not like, it's not like me to, if I normally, if I'd bat that long, I would score more, but it's just a real graft against some seriously good bowlers. So either that one, which obviously we went on to win that game, which obviously makes it even better. But also the 94 at Liverpool against Derby. Again, we got off to a bit of a tricky start, and to kind of back the way I did, I felt really pleased about that. So they'd be my two highlights.
Yeah, I mean, that 94 at Liverpool you mentioned there, that was, again, one of those innings that must have been like agonising for you, because as much as you got 94... still didn't manage to get to 100, but yeah. What's it like? How do you find playing at Outgrounds as well? Certainly this year, you know, you've played at 3 or 4 games at Old Trafford. There can't have been more than that, really. How did you find this season in terms of playing at Outgrounds and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was tough. Port Lanks, obviously, as a club, did very well to organise what we did leading up to it, given the situation. But
yeah,
we were doing all our training at Chester. And they did a fantastic job of providing us with the facilities that they did. They had 2 pitches, some centre wicket practice, and that was fantastic. But obviously, it is a club ground. It's a very good club ground, but the pitches, obviously, over a period of time, a couple of sessions, worn out quicker than what it would at Old Trafford in the nets, etc. And that obviously made our work harder, because we couldn't do exactly what we could necessarily do at Old Trafford. But given the whole situation, I thought everyone got stuck in really well. And from the ground staff as well, they worked tirelessly day and night to facilitate what we needed as best they could. But yeah, I really enjoy playing at Outgrounds. And I had some nice success there as well. And it is quite nice. Like, to be sometimes, especially if it is packed. It's actually quite nice to play an outground because you're so close to everything. You know, the actions it feels a bit louder because everyone's so close to you, I guess.
Yeah, they're brilliant, aren't they, outgrounds? And Josh, we have to follow that up. If you had to choose one outground to play a county championship match at, which ground would you choose and why?
I really enjoy playing at Sedbergh. Really nice ground. Didn't particularly do very well, but just like the scenery, the whole thing about the wicket was fantastic. Obviously, the two outgrounds that I've had success at Southport and Liverpool, so the atmosphere at Southport that day was second to none. But I've obviously had a bit more success at Liverpool. So either of them two, I think. I've not really played at many outgrounds other than them, really. I've played at Radwick down in Middlesex, but never played there with a crowd. That was only second team stuff. So I can't really comment other than up here, really. So at any of them.
Yeah, fair enough. Did you play at Colwyn Bay last year?
Yeah, Colwyn Bay, that was a special. I didn't do very well again, but watching Dan get that 2-6-6 and then the atmosphere there was very good.
South Africans love playing at Colwyn Bay, clearly.
Yeah,
if I like any South African, you score runs at Colwyn Bay.
Well, Ashwell and
Alvira.
That was special.
Looking back on it, actually, that's pretty remarkable. Yeah, I went to last year's, but I didn't see Danes Knock. I went on day one. And I went to some of the partnership between Ashwell and Alvira. Mm. So, yeah, it's not bad. It's not. It's a very, very good ground, Colwyn Bay. Really is. Because it's right on the seafront, of course. So, or relatively on the seafront. So, it's nice. But it can get a bit cold at times. It can. But no, it's good. I guess that's just like being at Old Trafford, really. It can get cold. So,
or most of England at times. Especially during April.
Exactly.
But Josh, looking back on this season then, because it was obviously such a strange season for so many reasons. We had a reduced schedule, for example, of course, in the grips of a pandemic as well with no fans. What do you say was your toughest moment from this season?
Probably the heartbreak of the lads at the semi-final. Obviously, I weren't playing, but just the seeing some of the boys' emotions after that game, that was quite tough. Because there's nothing really you can do, really, apart from, you know, say that, you know, we've tried our best, etc., or whatever. But, yeah, that just topped off what was quite a difficult year, really, in terms of cricket. But, obviously, everyone's had highs and lows. We've had some good successes. I think given the season that we had, I thought we did very well. A lot of positives to take out of what was, like you said, quite a tough year, but you could talk for days about how you felt after each game, etc., but I think one of the toughest things would have been that the boys after the semi-final.
Would you say that was your toughest moment in your career so far, or would you say that something has, I don't know, maybe topped that per se?
No, I think right up there, but I think toughest moments so far would be from an individual point of view. How I felt after certain games or innings. So, like I said before, until you quite understand that nothing's going to be perfect every time, it can. If you don't accept that, it can get you quite down. And there has been times where I've been like quite down about it. And I've had to do a lot of hard work as well behind the scenes and off the pitch, etc., to try and get in a better place. And yeah, I reckon they're probably the hardest ones in my career.
Just speaking about that, Josh, because we do talk about, obviously, the psychological aspects of the game as well here on the County Cricket Podcast. You mentioned there about, obviously, failures at times where maybe the game doesn't go your way. How do you personally approach the rebound from that then? Because you said there that you do stuff behind the scenes, off the field, for example. What specific things do you do to almost put your psyche back in the right frame of mind?
I suppose it depends on the individual, how they look at something, how they look at failure, how they look at success, how they look at... It depends what's got them feeling, how they feel. It could be the way they got out, could be the score, could be a run of form. I don't know. It could be something that builds up to that. For me, it was always like over-analysing stuff. It was always about overlooking, looking too deep into something that had happened and then thinking, oh, that was it, and you know, I'm never going to play again, etc., So for me, I used to sit in my hotel room at night late before bed, and I'd be like looking at the way I got out and thinking, oh, I I'm becoming a first class cricketer, I shouldn't really be getting out in such a soft way. And then it would lead on to, like, I'd have a couple of bad knocks, and then you're like, I'm going to play again. And then it becomes, or for me, it became like a state side of it. So how I was mentally and how I looked at what I was going to do. So I'd almost look at when I weren't playing very well, when I'm not playing well in general. I think generally it's because my frame of mind's not quite right. And it can be something like thinking about something that's going to happen when it's not even happened. So I'd be waiting to bat thinking, well, if he comes on, he's probably going to get me out. You know, like them sorts of things, or he's going to do this and I'll probably do this. And I hadn't even batted yet. So you kind of already out before you've gone out to bat. So for me, and the work that I do with a few individuals that I use at lengths, a lot of it is purely based on getting me in the right state to play cricket.
Well, that's fascinating. I was really quite engrossed by that. And it's very interesting, isn't it, the game of cricket, because it's one of those sports where it's not realistically all about the physical aspects. And I'll bring up the edge again. We've already spoke about the game never changes, basically. And yet you feel as though every single situation, every single scenario can either be for or against you. But just touch upon that. And you said that you almost feel as though you're out before you even reach the middle at times. Would you say that that's fear of failure?
Yeah, big time. Yeah. I think whoever you've had these chats with, if you ask that question, I think obviously no one wants to fail. But I think as well, because everything that we do is everything, you know, every contract that you sign is all based on outcomes. So it's all, you know, you don't sign contract extensions if you've had two bad years, generally you're out the door. If you've had a bad season, you might not get a contract extension, which then all becomes about the outcome of your next season or your next innings or your next ball that you bowl or something like that. So yeah, there's definitely a massive fear of failure. I think everyone would be lying if they said they didn't have it. It's just, how do you control that? That's the important thing. That's the important thing for me, is how everyone has it in the world. I think a lot of people would be lying to say that they don't have fear of failure. It's just how you are still able to perform under pressure, and that would be it for me.
Very, very nicely put. And it's spot on as well, isn't it? Everyone has those doubts creeping in. I mean, it's still something that I personally, I'm still trying to work on. It's something that I'm trying to work on in my character, for example. And I'm not a professional sportsman by any means. But it's just coming to terms with, at times, for example, on a podcast, when you misspeak, for example, or you say something statistically incorrect on a cricket analysis, it's almost coming to terms with that and realising, you know what, you're going to make mistakes in life. And it's about coming back from it. Again, I'd bring up the R word, resilience, and it does come back into the game so often. It's something which, as long as you have, you're going to succeed in the game of cricket. But it is just fascinating, isn't it? And we could talk for absolutely hours about the psychological aspects of the game, because it's something that we're still trying to learn about.
No, I think that's the key as well, is that the game of cricket, all right, is still played over 22 yards with six stumps and four bails. I know that, and 11 people play, I get that, but the game has changed over a period of time. Like, if you speak to Ian Botham, for example, he would probably say he might not have had it. You know, he might not have felt that, because he was obviously that character, wasn't he, about, like, giving the front. A bit like, did you watch the thing on Freddie Flintoff with bulimia? You see, yes. That? Look at someone like Freddie, who had a massive personality, was always, listen, I want the ball, give it to me in this tough situation. But yeah, he still struggles off the pitch with certain things. It just goes to show that you can be as strong as you want, but everyone still has this in the background somewhere. And it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter whether you're a cricketer, footballer, stack shelves at Asda, doing an exam at A level. It doesn't matter. Everyone has it, 100%.
Correct. Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned Freddie there. Also Tyson Fury, the heavyweight champion of the world. He also has these vulnerabilities, these insecurities at times. And yeah, again, it is interesting, and it's something that I'm glad that in the modern world we do speak about. It is very, very interesting. Yeah. And I did just want to touch upon one final aspect of obviously the psychological aspect of the game. Josh, would you say that social media does play any impact on, I don't know, the way in which you react to failure per se? Because we do live in a world now, you got Twitter, Instagram, you got fans. I know, Joe, you're not like this, you're not a reactionary fan. But sometimes fans may look at performance. They might say, you need to be dropped, this, that, the other. They might send you a bit of abuse. Does that ever get you down, or are you quite, resilient to that aspect of the game?
I think when I first signed, I didn't really understand it. You know, social media for me was, I don't know, just something to go on and keep from being bored. Upload the odd picture here and there, and way of speaking to your friends on Facebook or something like that. And then, obviously, that again has changed over time. And as we all know, when it's going well, social media is fantastic. You get so much publicity, you get nice comments. People around the world can see what you're doing and how well you're doing at that time. But obviously, within a split second, it changes. So you can be the best player in the world to someone that is watching, and you get 174 one week, and then the next innings you get none, and they want you out of the team. So I'd be lying to say that I've never got down about comments that I've seen. I do try my best not to read them. Obviously, sometimes that can't be helped, just because they will send you messages, and not always nice. But unfortunately, that you're never going to get away from it. It is part of the game, and it's one thing you've just got to kind of accept that. You know, I also say, I heard it, I can't remember who it was off once, but I heard a comment of someone saying like he was getting abuse all the time on Twitter. And he just said something like, "I'm really sorry that I'm living your dream," or something like that. And he was getting abuse from someone because they can't do what he's doing. And I sometimes do think that is part of it. And a lot of the time I do think of replying with stuff, but it's just not worth it because they don't actually understand how, because half of them have not even played the game at any level, never mind professional level. So they actually don't understand what's going on and how hard it actually is to hit an 85 mile an hour swinging ball and nipping ball or play a bouncer that's going to rip your helmet off. They've got no idea. So half it's not worth the breath. It's just, you just got to accept that is what happens and that's just how it is.
Well, I think that's a wonderful attitude to have with regards to social media, really. And it's an excellent point. And I suppose that is something that we, as fans of the sport, could work on at times. I feel like with regards to England in particular, sometimes fans can be a bit fickle in terms of the way in which we all heap praise on someone as soon as they get a century, and then they get a low score, they drop a catch, and suddenly they're public enemy number one. And again, we could talk about this for absolutely hours. But Josh, we will go on to the next topic then. And it is pretty much in a similar vein. Who is the toughest bowler that you've faced so far in county cricket? Has there ever been anyone that's, I don't know, really stood out to you in terms of the aggression and ferocity that they've bowled at you per se?
There's a lot of aggressive fast bowlers. That's just how they are, isn't it? Joe will tell you if you watch Chappie or if you watch Jimmy Ball or something like that, it at times can get heated. But they're allowed to get angry. You know, as bad as we get angry sometimes, or that's just how it is, isn't it? But faced a lot of good bowlers. I can't say I've probably on debut was as hard as I've had it off Ricky Clark, really, but other than that, it's not really, I don't think it happens as much as people think. Obviously the general stuff will happen, people will say stuff, but generally speaking it's not a massive part of it really. But yeah, I face some seriously angry balls at times. Yeah,
who'd you say was the angriest if you had to choose one?
Chris Rushworth's up there.
He's really? Rushy?
He can get quite angry. Ricky Clark, obviously, on debut. One of the angriest ones I've ever seen, and I played with him. Obviously, he's just retired. He had a great career. Graham Onions. One of the angriest bowlers I've ever met in my life.
Fair enough. That's just how fast bowlers are, though, aren't they? I suppose they're a different breed.
A different breed, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Good choices there, Josh. And in terms of batsmen then, who do you say is the toughest and most skilled batsman that you bowled at, per se?
Off the top of my head, I probably couldn't tell you, but one person I've always found really hard to bowl at and shut down is Wayne Madsen. Yeah.
Just fair enough.
He used to just hit balls in areas where you just don't think it's possible. Off good balls. Yeah.
Yeah. Has he ever swept you? Or attempted to sweep you?
I'm not convinced I bowled him. Maybe in a one-day game, but I think I bowled middle innings. I don't think he'd sweat me, but I've been on the end of a lot of sweeps at his Blade Fielding. People like Parky and Crofty and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, he loves the sweep anyway, Madsen. He absolutely loves it. his go-to, some might say.
Yeah.
Let's look ahead now, Josh, to 2021. Is there anything in particular that you're looking to improve on in your overall game?
Yeah, I think everything. I think I'd be lying if I said I was happy with anything, really. Obviously, I want to keep building on what I'm doing in Red Bull, and I think I'm getting closer and closer each time. But obviously, you never master anything. But obviously, I want to keep doing what I'm doing in Red Bull and hopefully build on that. But obviously, I want to look to really try and improve that white ball and try and become a proper all-rounder in all formats, really, and make some match-winning performances in the white ball cricket.
Yeah, fair enough. And what about in the whole of your county career? Obviously, you've got years and years ahead of you. Is there anything, or what do you want to achieve in the remainder of your county career?
Obviously, each player will have different targets, but just obviously score as many hundreds as I can, average as much as I can. I don't want to set any figures and say, oh, I want to average 40, because if I'm honest, I'd love to average 60. 70, whatever, you know, obviously, but I just want to become ideally, I'd love to play international cricket at some stage, but in terms of county cricket, I just want to be the absolute best I can be, and whatever that is, that's what that is. I just want to make sure that I do everything and give everything to give me the best chance.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty good to hear as a Lanx fan as well, to be honest. That's a pretty good thing to hear. A lot of Josh Bahanan hundreds over the next few years. Yeah. Actually, Josh, can I just ask you, what do you think of the new Red Bull format? Do you like the way it is, or do you prefer? Because obviously, Lanx have just got promoted to Division 1, so in that sense, it's quite frustrating as a fan. But from a player's point of view, do you like the new format, or do you prefer the old one?
I think, obviously, with being in Division 1, and the few games that I did play in Division 1, I loved the players that you play against, obviously, the best that they are in England. So, and obviously, generally, a lot of them that are playing Division 1, a number of them are playing international cricket, and watching the way they go about it and play, etc., is phenomenal. Given that there's a hell of a lot of good cricketers in Division 2, and it's no easier because, you know, you're still playing against first-class cricketers. It's just that probably not many of them have not played international cricket through playing at a smaller club or something like that. You still play against people like Wayne Madsen, who average 42 or something in first-class cricket. Ridiculous. After so many games. But, yeah, I think I'd love to play in Div 1 because that's obviously, with winning Division 2, and the club's only, I think, not won it since 2011. Obviously, as a club, we want to win that again. And as a bunch of mates and teammates, we'd love to win that together. So that was the one thing we were kind of looking at. Because when we got relegated in 2018, I remember Paul Allett, he'd said, listen, lads, it's not a doom and gloom. It's just the start of 2 years to win Division 1. So obviously, the next year we won Division 2. And then we were on that stepping stone then. And obviously, it got cut short. But I do quite like the format as well, because you play against teams that you don't often play against. Like, I mean, I've never played at Kent, so that'd be an interesting one playing there. And you know, I've only played Glamorgan once. So like, it's quite nice to play new teams, but then also, speaking, I like to play Division 1, Division 2. But I also do think it's a good thing about having three divisions, because kind of in Division 2, you kind of think, well, if I lose, or I lose a handful of games, doesn't matter because I can't go down any further. Whereas if you've got that Division 3, it might just make that division just a little bit more competitive as such.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting take on it. It really is. And I guess, obviously now, both being myself and Aaron, both supporting teams in Division 1, we've been kind of looking at it from a Division 1 perspective. But actually, when we've spoken to, you know, people who play in Division 2, they've actually said, you know, how it gives them a chance of winning the whole county championship.
Yeah.
Which I guess this is it. Obviously, 2020 was a unique season. And, you know, you could argue that 2021 will be even more unique in the sense that it's now anyone's game, anyone can win it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it opens it up a lot more. It will be interesting to see. Would you, depending on, hypothetically, let's say it's really successful and everyone seems to like it, would you be in favour of keeping that, or would you prefer to go back to, you know, the old format?
I don't know. I kind of hope that this year goes really well for us, obviously, as a team. and just kind of and see how it kind of pans out. Because I think last year was obviously it had them three tiers, but you're all kind of playing against people that you play against a lot of the time.
All the time, yeah.
Twice in a T20 game, play them twice and or once in the one day, and then you might play the odd team in Red Bull cricket. So it's a little bit different last year. I'm quite looking forward to everyone being in different kind of groups. So maybe see how it works out, see what everyone's thing is and go from there.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think it'll be interesting to see. And of course, well, myself and Josh hoping Lanx can go all the way and win the county championship and the Bob Willis Trophy, which of course will be available to win as well next year. So yeah, that does wrap up today's main section. Before we do close things up today, we do have teammates to do. So Josh, you know how this works. For the listeners out there, most people probably know, but basically, I'll just explain it anyway quickly. We'll ask Josh a question. So for example, the first one is teacher's pet at Lancashire, and he will have to answer with the necessary or the answer who he believes the answer is based on the Lancashire dressing room. So yeah, as I say, the first one is, who is the teacher's pet at Lancashire?
Danny Lamb likes a bit of that. He's right up there with can't obviously say what I want to say on the podcast, but he's proper. He's a bit of a teacher's pet.
Fair enough. See, this is why I love teammates. Really is, it's just a lot of fun to end the podcast off.
It is a very, very good segment, yeah.
They'd have some other words to use then, but...
The next one then, Josh. Who has the best nickname at Old Trafford?
Best nickname? Captain, this is quite good, Dane. Call him Malaysia. I have no idea what it means. It is, I'm guessing it's some South African. He just started to say it, obviously, when he came over, and everyone just cottoned on, and just one of the things that he says all the time, Malaysia. So that's his nickname. Pretty unique, I guess.
Yeah. I was not expecting to say that, I'll be honest.
Yeah, we do have a good one for Luke Wood, but again, can't say it.
We'll imagine that one then.
Yeah.
You've left that open to the imagination, really.
Yeah. Also, for the South African listeners out there, if you can translate that, if it's Afrikaans or something, please do let us know.
I think it does mean something like mate or something like that, or friend or something, but it's just stuck.
Fair enough. The next one, who is the team DJ?
There's a couple. I suppose it depends what you want or who you're in the gym with. Or generally on game days, I think Davo does it, Alex Davis. But if it, obviously it depends who... If you're in the gym, who you're in the gym with. Generally, like Rob Jones likes going on it. Keeks goes on it. As soon as Chappie steps in, everyone has to listen to rock and roll and all that stuff. It's a bit of a mixture. It all depends who wants to go on it, really.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you find that with a lot of dressing rooms, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. There's never really one just outright DJ, is it, really? Yeah.
DJs. We should change it for the next one, Joe.
Yeah, we should.
But in a similar vein then, Josh, our next one is always a classic here on the County Cricket Podcast, and that is the Karaoke King. And what is their preferred song of choice?
If I'm brutally honest, never really happened with us. Yeah, because generally if we do go out, say, after a four-day win, very rare there's karaoke. It's just, I don't know, everyone just has a... Just have a drink and have a sing at a table or something. But everyone pretty much, once as soon as they've had a beer, has a sing, really. No, we've never really done karaoke, so I apologise. I've not really got an answer for that.
No, fair enough. There's no answer.
Yeah.
That's teammates. The next one, this is quite an interesting one. Who is the biggest prankster?
Probably have to say Tom Bailey or Crofty.
Fair enough. What do they tend to? Who do they tend to prank on? What like pranks do they tend to pull?
Well, Bells does all sorts of stuff. He's just a different breed. But Crofty does stuff like in funny ways. He'll like, I don't know. He'll just walk past and just flick your chin or like, hit you in the chest. Just like does like pranks that way. I don't know. Leave like the salt thing off at the top and you. You know, like in Nando's, you leave the salt thing and then you tip it and it all comes out. Them sort of things.
Fair enough.
On to our next one then, Josh. Who do you say is Mr. Celebration? Who has the best celebrations in the Lancashire dressing room?
Well, I think you know that one. have to be Rob Jones.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah, and probably as a bowler, or what was an all-rounder, Lammy.
Yeah.
Lammy after a wicket, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. And I also think Parky has some passionate celebrations as well.
Okay. Yeah. He likes a celebration as well, yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, fair enough. The next one, you kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier. Who's the best dressed and the worst dressed?
Quite like Alex Davis's dress sense. Quite smart, quite cool as well. There's quite a few that are worst dressed, but I suppose it depends what you like. But Bales wears some interesting gears, and so does Rob Jones and Luke Wood wear some interesting stuff. But yeah.
It's always an interesting one, that, isn't it? Especially worst dressed. You do get some strange ones when you look at it after. Always a classic. Moving on to our next question then, Josh. Who do you say is the social media addict at Lanx?
There's a few, to be fair. Luke Wood, always on it. Daniel Lamb, always on it. Alex Davis spends a bit a bit of time on there too.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I think, certainly on his Instagram, I think Liam Livingston's been on it a lot recently because he's got nothing else to do, has he? Been in so many bubbles over the summer and now.
Yeah, as soon as he leaves England, seems to just post all these nice pictures. And I think it's just jealous, really.
Yeah, he's in ways like Perth right now, isn't he? So
yeah, I think
not exactly bad. Not exactly bad.
Yeah.
The next one, this is the penultimate one, and this is always an interesting one. The next two are very... will no doubt be hotly debated. Who's the best footballer?
See, it's a touchy subject, this, because we're not quite allowed to play football. So we used to play this thing called like net football. We used to have the knock-up net where you hit balls into the morning. You used to have teams split up and you like got to take three touches, you only had one bounce between you. Livy's good at that. Alex is very good at that. There's a few quite good at that, but I'd probably say it's footballers from what I've seen. I remember doing 12th man for England. I'd probably say Jimmy.
Yeah. All the England lads. Always the England lads.
Yeah. They always have fun, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. They all have techers though, don't they? Like we saw during this year's... Was it the Pakistan series or West Indies where they did the trick shot off the balcony into the bin?
That was a West Indies, I think. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that was very, very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Talented bunch, the England lads. Not just at cricket. Mm. And then our final one, Josh, which again, this is always hotly debated. Okay, so you may need to consider your choice quite carefully for this one. Who is the best golfer at Lanx?
I think if you went for consistency, probably Alex Davis. Doesn't hit it very far, but generally pretty straight, and he's got all the other touches as well around the green, putting, etc. But I really enjoy when me and Livy play together because it's just how he doesn't snap his back all the clubs. I have no idea because he hits it that far, but it can go anywhere.
Yeah, I can imagine he hits it far. Is he do you reckon if he had a full toss to hit and a golf ball for tee to hit, which do you reckon he'd hit further?
Oh, a golf ball without a doubt.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can imagine he can hit a golf ball a long way.
Yeah, very much so.
I just found that quite funny because it's almost like you spoke with Alex Davis. He was almost like the Kane Williams on the golf course, touch player finesse. And then Liam Livingston, exactly like he plays his cricket, just absolute howitzer.
I think he just has one way in life, I think.
Well, Josh, that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment and, of course, to the end of today's podcast as well. So before we say goodbye to you and the listeners out there, do you just have anything to quickly plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example?
No, not particularly, no. Just keep tuning into the podcast, I guess. It's been very enjoyable having a chat with you. Very good.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Josh. That's very kind and been a fantastic guest. Really, really interesting. Really quite fascinating. And of course, we will still leave your social media handles in the description as well. Okay, so if you want to go and follow Josh, please do. Absolutely quality bloke. Well, that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you as always for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.